he thought. She knew the Montanes better than most, at least among those who were still alive. Finally, they reached another checkpoint staffed with Blackbird guards, none of whom were known to Destin. They all seemed to know Granger, though. After some whispered discussion, the group passed through. Lila had been amazingly silent so far, but now she spoke up.
"How many hostages are down here?"
Granger lifted one shoulder in a half-shrug.
"Probably 30. That's not counting the Litlings."
Marina's head came up. "The children are down here." This revelation had broken through her wall. She'd always had a soft spot for children.
"They'd want to be with their mothers, wouldn't they?" Granger said. "I've asked the guards to gather everyone up for a count."
The next area was better lit, and the air seemed a little more breathable. Destin could see evidence that the families, or their captors, had tried to make their prison more comfortable. Here and there, a rug centered a gathering of random furniture. Families had set up in some of the side chambers, with beds lining the walls, tables and chairs, and draperies hung over the entries to provide a bit more privacy.
"Many of our guests have apartments here in the capital," Granger said. "Thus, we were able to bring in their own furniture, so that they would feel at home."
"A few months down here, and their furniture will be fit for the midden heap," Destin said.
"Hopefully, peace will be restored before then," Granger said. "It was their choice, of course, whether to bring their belongings in."
"What are they eating down here?" Lila said.
"They are supplied from the kitchens," Granger said. "They do much of their own cooking, since we cannot exactly serve formal meals. That would draw too much attention, all that coming and going. Fortunately, goods keep well down here."
"But people don't," Destin thought, pressing his lips together. The families would never forget this, and the Thanes would never forgive it. This is not how you treat people that you might want as your allies later on. But maybe Jarrett doesn't care. He has Granger, after all, who is probably plotting his overthrow. Destin could hear voices from farther on. The Blackbirds had gone on ahead of them, no doubt to begin the gathering process. The families were assembled in a larger chamber in the cave, what seemed to stand in for a great hall. A table, not large enough to accommodate everyone at once, but sizable, stood at one end. Destin smelled wood smoke and realized that there must be some sort of kitchen nearby. They stood in a shabby little group, their faces closed and guarded. He recognized some of them, Lady Madelon and her daughter, Christina Harrisford and her four younger children. Her husband, Ross, had been killed in the war with the North. Her eldest, Rafe, was with the rebels at White Oaks. Patrice Delacroix, mother to the unfortunate Estelle, and wife to Pascal, who had joined the rebels. Danielle Oberon, cousin to Delacroix. She'd taken full advantage of the family's rise when Delacroix was Montaigne's favorite. Several flinched and looked away when they saw Destin. His face was well known at court, his reputation throughout the empire.
"Do they think I'm going to torture them? Interrogate them? Murder them?"
"Well, yes. Why wouldn't they?" Granger came up beside him.
"The count is 45, Lieutenant, 28 adults and 17 children."
Lila wrote that number down, although Destin had noticed that she was taking her own count.
"Lieutenant Khan,"
Lady Madelon said, fixing on him immediately.
"I won't say welcome, because that would be dishonest, and I try to tell the truth as often as I can."
Christina Harrisford came up beside her and patted her arm.
"Now, now, Marjorie. Just because we've fallen on hard times doesn't mean that we should forget our manners."
She looked up at Destin.
Can we offer you some gruel, Lieutenant?
We're all out of gruel, a voice called from amid the crowd.
Some bread and water, then. Harrisford arched her brow. Tell me, Lieutenant, is it true that bread is still wholesome if one cuts the mold off?
Destin was struck by the iron-spined defiance of these women, kept below ground for months, aware of how tenuous their position was. Strong men do choose strong women, he thought. It's only the weak that are threatened by them.
Thank you, he said, but we're actually here for another purpose. Is everyone here? Is anyone missing?
There are two babies asleep in the nursery, Harrisford said, folding her arms. Shall we wake them up?
Destin shook his head. That makes 47, he thought. He turned to Marina.
Your Majesty?
I bring some good news, Marina said. We're here to invite you to a party.
You could have heard a pin drop in the chamber.
A party?
Lady Madelon looked at Lady Harrisford.
Who the hell is inviting us to a party?
It seemed that her time underground had surfaced the grit in the Thanely.
His Majesty is entertaining the ambassadors and nobility from the Down Realms, Marina said, and he would like you to be there.
Why? Delacroix said, her body stiff with disapproval. Is he going to stage an execution for his guests?
Let me remind you that King Gerrit was not responsible for Lady Estelle's unfortunate death, Marina said.
Gerard is dead, Delacroix said. I expected that, as Gerrit's mother, you would exert more influence over.
I offer the King Council, Marina said, a little sharply. But, like his father, he makes his own decisions. I would argue that your influence is limited as long as you are locked up out of sight. This could be an opportunity to forge a new relationship with a new king.
He can forge a new relationship with us by freeing us and allowing us to rejoin our families, Lady Madelon said. That is unlikely to happen any time soon, Destin said. But this would afford you a little freedom. It could be a start.
Destin knew he should stay out of it. He was no diplomat, and their hatred of him ran deep.
Why would the king send his spy master to invite us to a party?
Lady Delacroix said, tilting her head at Destin.
Are you going to handwrite the invitations, too?
The lieutenant is here to protect me from all of you.
Marina rolled her eyes, and several of the ladies laughed. It helped that Marina was popular with the ladies of the court. Despite her limited influence over the king, she was a person who could find a way to get things done behind the scenes. Destin knew for a fact that she had intervened on behalf of many in the room over the years.
"Does he mean to parade us before his guests wearing these clothes?"
Harrisford swirled her filthy skirts.
Is this really the kind of image he wants to present to his underlords?
No, I don't believe he does, Marina said. I have arranged for you to get some new clothes, if you have nothing suitable. To be honest, I asked for this. I am so damned tired of making conversation with every deadly dull merchant, noble and official, who passes through the city. I could use some help.
Lady Harrisford laughed.
You poor thing.
They all knew, to varying degrees, what her life had been like with Gerard. Speaking to dull merchants was the least of it.
When it comes to the rebellion, I don't think it will make a big difference politically. Everybody with a brain in his head will understand why you're there.
Marina smiled sadly.
I have missed all of you so much.
Heads were nodding all around, accompanied by a murmur of,
We've missed you too.
What about the children? Someone asked. Are they invited?
Granger began shaking his head, but Marina said, Of course.
It would very much please me if every single one of you is there. Every single one of you, she repeated, making eye contact with one and then another. Costume parties are so much fun. It should be a night you'll never forget. Jarrett is sparing no expense. It's a costume party?
This was a child's voice, and the girl sounded excited.
I'm not coming,
somebody said in a loud and carrying voice. Everybody turned to look and see who had spoken.
Harper, we'll talk about this later, Lady Matalon said.
No, Mama, we'll talk about it now.
With that, Harper Matalon stepped out front. The Matalon scowl planted on her face.
I am not going to any parties with the swiving king or his swiving court.
Harper, that language is inappropriate.
Lady Matalon tried to pull her daughter back into the safety of the crowd, but she wrenched free.
Would despicable be better?
Harper put her hands on her hips.
You're the one that always tells me to use my words and not my fists.
Lady Harper, Marina said gently, I really want to have you at my party. Please come.
Harper wavered, then shook her head.
If it was just your party, Your Majesty, you know I would come. But I refuse to dress up and mince around for him. If he wants me at his party, he'll have to drag me there in chains and show his guests how despicable he is.
Granger pushed past the Queen.
Listen to me, you ungrateful, traitorous whelpling. If King Jarrett invites you to a party, you had better...
Shut up, Granger. Destin said. Let me talk to Harper in private. I think I can persuade her to come.
He extended his hand toward her, and all the ladies shrank back as one, looks of horror on their faces.
She's just a child, Lieutenant, Lady Matalon said, pushing Harper behind her. Leave her alone. I will talk to her, and you can be sure that she will be there, if that is what the king commands.
She is not a child, Lady Matalon. If she is old enough to have opinions and to speak them aloud, she is old enough to defend them.
Take me instead, Lady Matalon said, chin up, but her voice trembling just a bit.
You are not the one I'm having an issue with, he said.
Then, seeing her stricken face, he relented a little.
You can come with her, if you like. We'll just step into one of these smaller rooms and have a talk.
Here!
Lila called. She stood at the entrance to one of the cells.
This is clear.
After you, Destin said.
Lady Matalon gripped her daughter's hand, and they walked ahead of Destin, backs straight, as if marching to their execution. The room had fallen dead silent behind them. This is why you don't plan parties, Destin thought. Nobody would come. You're never that fun to be around. The room was set up as sleeping quarters for a family, with pallets on the floor and one actual bed. Thanely Matalon whispered urgently into Harper's ear, while Destin did a quick round of the room, putting up wards against eavesdroppers. Lila stood guard at the door. Always useful. Lila Barrowhill. Destin returned to where Harper and her mother were standing. As he approached, Lady Matalon drew Harper closer, under the protection of her arm.
Please don't spell her, Lady Matalon said. She's promised to cooperate.
I'm not going to spell her, Destin said.
He reached out and tilted the girl's chin up so that he could look into her eyes.
Listen to me, Harper. I really need you to come to this party. I need all of you to come, even the littlest child, and I hope you'll help me by persuading them.
Harper was clenching her teeth, struggling to keep her mouth shut, but he could see the resistance in her eyes.
Are you the youngest?
Destin said abruptly.
Or are you between your two brothers?
Her eyes narrowed.
I'm the youngest, she said, but only by a year. I'm nearly 14.
Which of your brothers are you most like, do you think? Hal or Robert?
Harper cocked her head, as if trying to work out the trick. Then she glanced at her mother for help.
Harper is most like Halston, our eldest, who died at Delphi, Lady Madelon said.
Then, glaring at her daughter, she added,
Although, on days like today, she reminds me of Robert.
Ah, Destin said, nodding. Harper, I have something for you.
He fished the thimble and chain out of his pocket and held it out to her.
Your brother, Captain Madelon, sent this. He says to tell you that he's been pricked, but he's not dead yet.
Harper's eyes widened in disbelief.
Captain Madelon?
She grabbed the thimble and brought it close to her face, examining it, then looked up at Destin.
How did you know about this? Are there listeners in the walls at White Oaks?
Let me see it, Harper,
Lady Madelon said. Harper spun around and displayed it to her mother on her outstretched palm. Lady Madelon poked at it with her forefinger, then looked up at Destin, her face hardening.
Are you really the kind of brute who would break the heart of a little girl?
Destin shook his head.
I'm not in the business of breaking hearts, he said, though sometimes it can't be avoided. Lady Madelon, Captain Madelon sent another message for you. He said to tell you to look on the bright side.
Halston, she whispered, her eyes filling with tears.
Where is he?
Harper demanded.
Where's my brother? Is he in prison too?
Where are my brothers would be a better question, Destin said. I can't tell you that, but I can tell you that they really want you to come to King Jarrett's party.
Why are you doing this?
Lady Madelon said, lowering her voice and looking over her shoulder at Lila.
I cannot fathom why you would be working with Halston and Robert.
Or why they would be working with you, Harper said. If they even are. Politics makes for strange bedfellows. Probably best not to go there. This enterprise is a risk that I would have preferred not to take, Destin said. But as it turns out, Lady Harper, your brothers and I share a common goal. You may question whether I'm telling the truth, but you have to consider the possibility that I am, and weigh whether sticking it to the king is worth it.
The ladies Madelon looked at each other.
All right, Harper said. I will come.
Will you help talk the others into coming?
She met his gaze.
I will.
Now, when you speak to the others, you mustn't mention your brother's involvement, or my involvement, or in any way imply that anything other than a party is in store. You must simply convey the message that it is critical that they come. Agreed?
Agreed.
Thank you, Destin said, relieved. Shall we return to the others?
Harper dangled the thimble in front of Destin.
You should give this back to Hal, to keep him safe.
She wore a mask of innocence, but Destin was used to reading faces, to see what lay underneath. She's trying to figure out where he is, whether he's close, whether I'm going to see him, Destin thought. He closed her hand over the thimble.
You can give it back to him yourself when you see him. Now, when we walk back into the other room, it's important that you appear properly chastened, as if I've spent this time schooling you on the consequences of defying the king. I am not the sort of man who delivers hope to political prisoners.
Maybe you are,
Harper said, giving him an appraising look. and then she drew her head in and rounded her shoulders, as if she expected a blow to fall at any moment. She fixed her eyes on the floor, her lower lip trembling. The transformation was stunning. She was like a snake shedding one skin and putting on another.
"You're not like either of your brothers," Destin thought. "You lack their bone-deep instinct for honesty. You might have a future as a spy."
Chapter 39 Reunion. Liz sat her horse and watched her fledgling cavalry go through its maneuvers on the parade ground. It was an exercise in frustration. Her soldiers seemed unable to communicate with their mounts in a meaningful way. Every move the horses made seemed to surprise their riders, with sometimes disastrous results.
"Left turn!" she shouted. "Now forward!"
Once again, the columns dissolved into chaos, horses rearing and showing their teeth. Several riders ended up on the ground.
"Ghazali!"
she shouted to one of the field officers.
"I said 5 paces before the turn."
Ghazali stared at her as if she were speaking a foreign language, which she was, in a way. Given that the Carthian army was a mix of nationalities, she used common as the language of command. She was improving in Carthian, in military vocabulary at least. But this job was hard enough without hunting for words all day long.
"What is the point of riding back and forth across the field in pretty formations?"
Talisamara nudged his horse closer.
"This is a battle, not a dance. Why does it matter how they get to the enemy, as long as they get there?"
"Use your eyes," Liz said, in no mood to indulge the shiplord's constant questions. "The idea is to train the soldier so that in the heat of battle, he or she can act without thinking. And if you can't train the man, you train his horse."
"Ghazali!" she shouted. "Go back to the saber and lance exercises you practiced yesterday, this time using all gates,"
Liz said, giving up on the complexities of turning. "Make 50 passes across the grounds, and you're done for the day." Right now, the Bloodsworn were as likely to cut up each other as the enemy, which needed fixing. Except the enemy might be her own Highlander army. That was one of many reasons her head was pounding. Samara knew next to nothing about land-based warfare, and Liz had no desire to tutor him. Yet, he'd ridden out to join her as soon as he spotted her drilling the cavalry. It seemed he was constantly at her side, when he wasn't attending the Empress, asking questions and challenging Liz's answers. He obviously saw her as his rival, given that nearly everyone else on the island was Bloodsworn. He resented that Liz had been given command of the army, and she knew he'd be happy to seize the opportunity to sabotage her efforts or carry tales to the Empress. She wished he would go back to the sea, and preferably drown. She didn't need the distraction, given the delicate balancing act she was trying to pull off. So she watched the horses sluice back and forth across the parade ground, and did her best to ignore him. She had no intention of grooming an army capable of defeating her Highlanders. What was bad for the Carthian army was good for the Fells. Yet failure had its own risks, especially with Samara taking such an interest in what she was doing. The Empress was no fool. Liz had to make a show of competence, or risk ending up in that mob of Bloodsworn, probably under Samara's command. Nearly every night, she'd wake up sweating from that nightmare. Still, it was so damned hard to do less than her best. Liz had spent years assessing soldiers, making the most of their strengths, and working around their weaknesses. The more she worked with the Empress's army, the more she realized that what had worked well in the Fells didn't apply here.
She'd always used her soldiers as independent agents, capable of making their own decisions and strategy changes, even in the heat of battle. She had prioritized conserving and protecting her troops, since they were usually outnumbered by the Southerners. With the exception of Queen Court and a few other battles, she had avoided confronting the enemy straight on. Her tactic of choice was a series of hit-and-run skirmishes that destroyed enemy morale and wore the enemy down. That had suited the soldiers she led in the terrain they were fighting in. Against overwhelming odds, it had kept Arden out of the north. These troops had no fear of death and felt no pain, so they had no need for a personal strategy of survival. They simply charged forward, howling, swinging their curved blades and cudgels until they rode down the enemy or their horses were cut out from under them. Liz found herself constantly playing both sides, considering how to best use the assets she had and how to best counter them in the field. This would be great preparation for fighting Celestine's forces, if she ever got the chance. In the meantime, her training strategy gradually shifted, until she was no longer training an army that could succeed in the mountains of the Fells. Instead, she was doing her best to train an army that could succeed in the flatlands of Arden. As she watched, a shadow passed across the parade ground. The horses panicked, rearing and screaming out a warning, dumping several riders to the ground. Liz looked up, shading her eyes, and saw a winged creature swoop down toward the horses. Its leathery wings all but spanned the parade ground. It glittered in the sun as if it were covered with blue, purple, and gold armor, or maybe jewels. It seized one of the horses, executed an awkward turn, and then, wings beating hard, it began to climb, heading out to sea again. Swearing, Samara yanked his bow from his saddle boot and sent an arrow flying. He was a good shot. It pinged against the creature's armor and fell into the water. Liz watched the beast until it disappeared into the sun.
"Thrice cursed Drekki," Samara spat. "That's twice this week it's gone after the horses."
Turning her attention back to her troops, Liz saw that one rider had taken a particularly bad spill. He stood, his foot at an impossible angle, and limped toward the barracks. Liz shuddered.
"Trust me, General. You feel it more than he does," Tully Samara said. "You must develop a thicker skin."
"If only we had blood-sworn horses," Liz said, shaking her head sadly, "and blood-sworn ships. We'd be unstoppable." Samara smiled thinly.
"I understand that there are more of your countrymen on the way to join the Bloodsworn. That should make you feel at home."
Having planted his daily thorn bush, Samara heeled his horse and trotted away. But even a thorn bush grows a flower sometimes, and sometimes the loveliest flower has poison at its heart. That afternoon, Liz met with the Empress on her pavilion by the sea. The Empress's current favorite, Tarek, was there fanning her with a palm leaf and feeding her sugared grapes from a golden bowl. He was very young, extraordinarily handsome, and absolutely terrified.
"You should choose a lover, General," Celestine said, licking sugar from her lips. "You are welcome to Tarek when I'm finished with him."
She patted his cheek fondly. Liz's cheeks heated.
"No, thank you, Your Eminence." "Would a girl suit you better?"
The Empress gestured toward a small group of maidservants sunning themselves on the cliffs nearby.
"If none of them suit, we could go farther afield, depending. I'm, really quite busy with the other things," Liz said. "Too bad," the Empress said. "You've been working so hard, and I'm trying to think of a way to reward you."
Liz cleared her throat. Your praise is all the reward I need, Empress. And a promise that I won't have to join your undead army.
I think this will please you, Celestine said. You've been saying that you would like to have more officers to work with you in order to manage our numbers. Yet, as we've seen, the Bloodsworn do not do well in a command position. So, I have a surprise for you.
She clapped her hands, and her maidservant went into the palace, returning with a small group of battered-looking prisoners, most wearing bits and pieces of Highlander uniforms.
These men claim that they were officers in your army, Captain, the Empress said, gesturing toward them. Experience that command of troops in the field. If you can persuade them to serve me without joining my Bloodsworn, I will let them live.
Liz gave the candidates a look over. Of the six, three were unknown to her. From the looks on their faces, however, she was not unknown to them. The question was, did they know her as Captain Grey, or as the heir to the Grey Wolf throne? The other three she recognized. Demeter Farrow, a water walker and lieutenant in her salvo. Monroe Graves, son of Lydia Byrne Graves, an artist turned artilleryman, and finally, like a recurrent bad dream, Quill Bosley. Bosley. He was definitely the sort to survive when so many other, more worthy soldiers had died. Liz took a deep breath, then released it.
Just when you think things can't get any worse.
They'd all seen hard use from the looks of them, Pharaoh in particular. Celestine disentangled herself from Tarek and levered to her feet.
Wetlanders, she said, welcome to Celestgard. Your lives have been spared because you have been selected to join my army under the command of General Grey. Do well, and you will be richly rewarded. Disappoint me, and you will find that there are other ways to serve.
The others stood silently, their eyes shifting from Celestine to Liz. But swiving Bosley instantly fell to one knee.
Empress, he said, head bowed, we will not disappoint you.
Chapter 40 Masquerade.
Kingsguard black might be your color, Robert said, looking Hal up and down. You would give any citizen of the Empire the shivers.
If so, it's more the uniform than the man, Hal said,
hoping he didn't look as uncomfortable as he felt. He buckled his belt with its empty scabbard, hoping he'd be given a weapon to fill that scabbard before long. He attached the braid that said he was a private. Privates are a copper a pound, not worthy of notice. At least, that was the hope. That was about as much as he knew of the plan. Hal was the sort that wanted to know from the start what he was getting into, and how he was going to get out.
You should have given up on that a long time ago, he thought.
The door banged open, startling the both of them. Hal expected Destin Karn, but instead it was Lila Barrowhill, this time clad in Scribner blues. She shut the door behind her, strode over to them, and looked them up and down.
This, she said, stabbing her forefinger into Robert's lapel, goes on the left side, not the right.
He stood there, speechless, while she unpinned a badge and repinned it on the other side.
"Who are you?" Robert managed.
"My name's not important."
She turned to look at Hal.
"Yours is correct," she said. "Quit gaping."
"Is it just my imagination, or do you work for everyone?" Hal said.
"That
That's me, everybody's girl. Do you have your masks? Good. If there's anything you want to bring with you, get it now, because you won't be back.
That, at least, is good news, Hal thought. Lila tossed Hal a large cloth sack. Put all your clothes in here and give them to me. You'll want them later, when you stop being a blackbird. And hurry. It's important that I get you two into position before we get this party started. We can't risk you running into people who might recognize you without your masks.
Hal began stuffing his and Robert's clothes into the bag. She opened the door and stood aside.
After you, she said.
When they walked out into the corridor, the guards that were usually there were gone.
Now, their escort said, glower at everyone and walk like a blackbird until I get you under cover.
How does a blackbird walk? Robert whispered.
Like he's got a burr up his ass, she said.
Hal did his best to comply as they descended to the ground floor of Newgate Prison and out into a light rain. Robert took a deep breath and let it out slowly. Hal knew that they might be going from the pot into the fire, but he felt the same relief to be out of Newgate. Even though it was a short walk from Newgate to the palace, they were accosted along the way by multiple people. At least their escort was. Everybody seemed to know Lila, from a farrier at the stables to a pantry maid taking a break outside the kitchens to another clerk who called,
"Hey, Lila, will you be at the Cold Crow tonight? I've got to win some of my money back."
"No," she said without missing a step. "I'm working tonight. Maybe at the turn of the week."
They did stop and wait when a velvet-clad merchant drew her aside for a hurried conversation. When she returned, she growled,
"Everybody's job is the most important."
She put on speed, as if to make up for lost time.
"Is that your name? Lila?"
Robert said, hurrying to keep up as they circled around to the back of the palace. She shot him a look.
"Damn," she said. "I was beginning to like you. Now I have to kill you."
She pushed open a door that was hidden behind a clump of shrubbery.
"In here."
She led them through what seemed to be a servant's entrance to a pantry and staging area that was no longer in use. Hal could hear the clamor of musicians trying out their tuning in the next room.
"Is that the ballroom?"
he said, tipping his head toward the sound. He'd been in there before, for parties during the holidays.
"Yes," Lila said. Opening a cabinet, she pulled out a cloth-wrapped bundle.
Inside were two standard-issue blackbird swords and two daggers. She handed out the weapons. Hal slid the blade home with a satisfactory hiss. Lila opened another cabinet. It was stuffed with what appeared to be black oilskin cloaks. Again, standard issue for the King's Guard here in the south, where winter was more often rainy than cold.
"Leave the cloaks in here until you need them," she said. "When the party gets underway, ease out and mingle."
She opened the door that should have led into the ballroom, but all Hal could see were thick blue draperies.
"The hostages will be wearing animal masks covered in sequins. Badgers, lions, elephants, dragons, and so on. They're all different styles and colors, so the hostages will be harder for the King's Guard to notice when they congregate. Get word to each one of them to drift toward the punch bowl when the temple sounds the quarter hour before 10 o'clock. Also, tell them to keep their masks on until they are told to remove them. We don't want anyone picking them out."
"That's a lot of information to deliver," Hal said. "Wouldn't it have been safer to let them know the plan before they come up to the ballroom? What if we miss someone? What if someone notices us making the rounds?"
"Lieutenant Karn wants to make sure nothing leaks beforehand. There are eyes and ears everywhere."
"But there are 28 adults. See that you get to everyone, and make sure you're not noticed."
She paused, and when there was no more protest, she went on.
"At 10 o'clock, all hell breaks loose.
and you will herd them behind the curtain and out through the exit door, handing each one a cloak to put on as they come through. Got it?
Where do we go once we get outside?
Robert's eyes were alight with excitement. He was all action, waiting to happen. The postern gate will be open, but you won't go there. You'll go back to Newgate.
Newgate? Hal shook his head. Why do we go back there?
Because it's close, and because nobody will look for you there. Once you're there, you'll get further orders.
What happens at 10 o'clock?
Robert asked. Like I said, you'll see. Now, I have errands to run. She left through the door they'd come in, leaving Hal and Robert staring after her.
What just happened? Robert whispered.
Damned if I know, Hal said.
Destin Karn descended the now familiar staircase to King Jarrett's secret prison, Luke Granger at his heels, along with a small crew of the king's hand-picked blackbirds. There were so many ways this complicated plan could go wrong, with so many untried civilians involved. So he'd have to feed them information just in time for them to put it to use. And he'd have to find a way to do it, with Granger shadowing his every step. The hostages were already assembled, dressed in their party clothes. Lila and Marina had done their work well, with help from Dosselin, Destin's tailor friend. They wore a combination of clothing fetched from their capital apartments, clothing they'd had with them in the pit, now carefully cleaned and repaired, and some new acquisitions by Lila for the children. He took a quick head count, all present and accounted for, including the Matalons. He asked Lady Harrisford to hand out the masks. The children, especially, were smitten with the animal masks, arguing over who would get what. He noted that Harper chose a dragon mask and her mother a badger.
No pushing, he said, feeling like a stand-in teacher at a grammar school. There are enough for everyone. Does everyone have a mask? Good. Don't put them on until we get upstairs. I don't want anyone stumbling and cracking their head open, because I'll have to clean up the blood. I do enough of that as it is.
The Litlings seemed to find this hilarious, their mothers less so. Granger seemed unmoored in this sea of women and children, as if they drained all of the swagger out of him, leaving the nastiness behind.
"Tell them we'll cut the whelplings' throats if they make a scene," he murmured to Destin.
"Good thinking," Destin murmured back. "That's guaranteed to put them in a party mood."
Taking a step away from Granger, Destin addressed the hostages.
"Now, just a word of caution before we go upstairs," he said. "I know you've been put in an awkward situation. This might seem like an opportunity for a show of opposition, some kind of demonstration to embarrass the king in front of his guests. Trust me, it's not. It will accomplish nothing, and it will damage Queen Marina, who stuck her neck out for you. Most importantly, it will put you at risk, since there's no telling how Jarrett will react. Does everyone understand?"
There followed a grudging mumble of agreement. Destin took a deep breath.
"Let's go," he said.
Chapter 41 Wallflower. It seemed to take forever to get the party started. Hal spent that time going over Lila's orders in his head, worrying about all the things that could go wrong. Who was Barrow Hill, anyway? She looked like a southern islander, and maybe she was, because she swore like a sailor. Was she some minion of Karn's? Had she been spying on the Thanes when they'd met at Temple Church? Karn must have a whole network of people to call upon, but how many of them could be trusted to go along with freeing the hostages? Finally, the band started up in earnest, and Hal could hear various dignitaries being introduced as they entered the ballroom. When it sounded like the room was sufficiently full of people, he pulled on his mask and motioned to his brother to do the same.
Let's go.
They closed the door gently behind them and found their way to an opening in the drapery. Hal peered out, but flinched back when he saw somebody standing just outside, next to the punch bowl. The man wore an Ardenine dress uniform and a red hawk mask. He had his back to them, but the general's braid on his shoulders and the shape of him made him easily identifiable as General Marin Karn. He stood, glaring out at the room, arms folded, like a stump rooted to the floor. Hal raised his hand to stop his brother, who was trying to slide past him.
"It's Karn, Senior," he hissed.
Robert peered out.
"Poor Karn's a wallflower," he whispered.
"Shh." Hal knew his brother was trying to dispel the tension, but there was nothing humorous about Marin Karn. What with the music and the announcements and all, Hal didn't think they could be heard, but he didn't want to take any chances. King Jarrett sat on a raised dais at the far end of the room, his mother and younger sister at his side. One by one, the loyal thanes and their ladies were introduced and walked the length of the room to pay their respects to the king. Beaudetort, Bouchon, and Larue, each with his lady on his arm. And then the guests from the far reaches of the empire, the ambassador from Bruinswallow, the thane of Weanhaven, the lord governor of Tamron, and the lord of the isles. The walls were lined with blackbirds, no, king's guards, sleek in their dress uniforms. Intermingled with them were officers from the regular army. Their assignment tonight would be to dance with any lady in need of a partner. They were armed, though, and from their expressions and posture, they seemed to be expecting trouble. To Hal's relief, the king summoned Karn Sr. to meet the military governor of Watergate, or some such. Once he walked away, Hal and Robert were free to slide out from behind the drapes. They joined the perimeter of social conscripts and waited. The king really had spared no expense. The ceilings were covered with billows of silk that met in the middle. From that midpoint dangled a huge red hawk made of papier-mâché, the kind that held prizes and candies. Masked servers walked around the room, offering smoked snails, quail eggs, and caviar, along with little biscuits filled with roast meat. Liquor was flowing at several bars. One entire wall was given to desserts. On any other night, Hal would have taken advantage, given his long period of ascetic living in the North. But tonight his stomach was tied in knots, and he was in no hurry to chance these fancy foods. It wasn't long before there was a stir in the entryway, signaling new arrivals. There was Destin Karn, gliding across the dance floor to speak to the king, who smiled and nodded. Hal watched with interest as Karn Jr. and Sr. exchanged stiff nods, their body language as hostile as could be. "They really don't like each other," Hal thought, recalling his conversation with Destin Karn at Newgate. "I wonder why." Karn Jr. spoke hurriedly to the band, which played a fanfare, bringing everyone's attention to the dais. Jarrett stood, Queen Marina and Princess Madeline beside him.
"Welcome to the heartbeat of the Empire," he said. "Celebrations with good friends and allies are important, even amid the uncertainties of war. We have with us tonight some of the fairest flowers of the realm, though some and their families have taken up arms against us. We have invited them to join us in the hope that this gesture might be a first step in reaching a permanent peace." "That's a shitload of scummer," Robert murmured. "When a king is shoveling it, you listen and you smile," Hal said, clapping along with the other guests. "Ladies, come forward," King Jarrett said. And they came, straight-backed women ushering their children, walking the length of the room
and curtsying before the royal family. As they did so, the royal crier called out their names.
Lady Patrice Delacroix and children. Lady Christina Harrisford and children. Lady Danielle Oberon.
He's not using their titles, Robert muttered.
It's likely he's given their titles away. From what I hear, he's been handing them out like candy.
Lady Beatrice Scoville.
There's Aunt Beatrice, Robert said, frowning. She looks a lot thinner than before.
Hal scanned the line of waiting families. Sure, he would recognize Harper and his mother despite the masks. When he didn't see them, sweat began trickling down the back of his neck. Was this just some kind of cruel trick or trap? Just as he was beginning to panic, the crier called,
Lady Marjorie Scoville Matalon and daughter Harper Scoville Matalon.
Hal's heart twisted as they walked forward, hand in hand, chins up, eyes straight ahead. It was no wonder he hadn't recognized them. For one thing, they were thinner, especially Harper. But that was partly because she was so much taller than the last time he'd seen her. When was that? More than a year ago? She'd pinned her hair up, too, which he wasn't used to. Hal's breath caught when he saw something glittering at Harper's neckline. It was the thimble.
Did you see that? Robert whispered. It was...
I know,
Hal said, his voice thick. He still didn't trust Destin Karn, but he'd kept that promise, at least. Anger nudged aside everything else as the Matalon ladies curtsied before the king and then moved off to the side, where the hostages huddled in a small group, as if unsure what to do next. As if they'd been invited to a party with people they had nothing in common with. Robert took a step forward, but Hal put out a hand to stop him.
Wait until there's more mingling before we beeline to them. In the meantime, why don't you ask someone to dance?
His brother gave him an irritated look, then crossed to the gathering of down-realm guests and bowed to an especially lovely young lady wearing a half-mask. Moments later, the band had struck up again, and he was out on the floor with her. Others among the wall-hangers were moving out into the throng, choosing unescorted ladies, offering their arms. Hal's heart beat faster as he walked toward the gathered hostages, but somebody got there before him.
"Ladies,"
the masked interloper said, bowing deeply to Harper and his mother.
"May I just say that you look absolutely bewitching this evening."
Hal detoured a bit and walked past them, stopping within earshot, pretending to sample sweets from a platter.
"Granger,"
Hal's mother said, her back stiff with disapproval, her voice icy. She and Harper dipped into the briefest of curtsies.
"Actually, it is Lord Granger now," he said.
"Is it?" his mother said. "Forgive me. It's so difficult to keep up with all of the newly minted lordlings here at court." Hal struggled not to stare. Usually his mother treated everyone with gracious courtesy, whether she was addressing the king or one of her tenants or a beggar on the street. Harper, too, was studying Granger, her arms crossed. It reminded Hal of that time he'd found his 3-year-old sister standing in the pasture with a stick in her hand. There was a viper in her path, and she couldn't decide whether to go around it or club it to death. Who the hell was Granger, and what had he done to earn such a chilly reception?
"I am hoping that your lovely daughter will consent to dance with me.
Lord Granger, my lovely daughter is far too young to consider."
"Let's go,"
Harper said, shooting a warning look at her mother. She stalked toward the dance floor, with Granger following behind. Hal's gracious mother glared after him, cursing under her breath.
"Harper doesn't know what she is getting into with that unprincipled scoundrel."
Lady Harrisford took her arm,
Don't worry, Marjorie. I've sent Helene to keep an eye on them. If anything untoward happens, she'll fetch us right away.
Hal was torn between forcibly cutting in on Lord Granger's dance and waiting until he had more information. Good sense prevailed, and he found himself bowing to his mother. Up close, he could see that, despite her fine clothes, months in a dungeon hadn't done her any good at all.
"Thanely Matalon," he said, swallowing hard. May I have the pleasure of this dance?"
He could tell that she was about to come back with a snappish reply, but then she froze, staring at him, as if she could see through the mask to the man underneath.
"Thank the Maker," she whispered, her voice husky with tears. "It's really you. I wasn't sure whether to believe it or not."
Hal offered his arm, and she accepted, and he led her out onto the dance floor. He tried hard to remember the steps she taught him so painstakingly. Tears were spilling down her cheeks, but she didn't miss a step.
"Don't cry, Mother," he whispered.
"They'll think I'm stepping on your toes."
That brought a smile.
"Now," he said, "Robert is here too. Don't look," he hastened to add. "I'll tell you what I know about the plan, and then you tell me about Granger."
When he'd finished, he said,
"Can you remember that? Any questions?"
"I'll remember."
"Good. Now, I need to get the same message to one adult in each and every one of the families. Can you help me with that? I think if you and Harper do it, it will be less obvious."
"Of course," his lady mother said. "I will make sure that everyone knows."
"Now, tell me about Granger."
"He came out of nowhere, moved up in the King's Guard, and now he's serving as bailiff," she said, with brisk brevity. "He's taught King Jarrett everything he knows about debauchery, and also handles a lot of his dirty work. Jarrett has rewarded him by giving him Whitehall."
"Whitehall?"
Now Hal understood his mother's barely concealed anger. Whitehall had been held by the Scovilles for centuries, since just after the breaking. His mother had brought it to the marriage as her dowry. It was close to White Oaks, and they'd often stayed there as children.
"He couldn't have taken possession of it, surely. I was just at White Oaks. The armies are massed, and the Thanes are preparing to march."
"How is your father, dear?"
his mother said, smiling at Lady Delacroix as she swept by. "He takes things so much to heart, and he's not as young as he used to be."
"Father's furious, as you'd expect, and determined to win. Now, about Whitehall."
"Granger hasn't taken possession, and he never will, if your father and I have anything to say about it. I think he's trying to hedge his bets. He's already betrothed, mind you, to an heiress in the Down Realms, who is considerably older than he is. But now he's thinking that if he marries Harper, that will damp down resistance to his claiming Whitehall, even if the Thanes prevail. If they don't, he could make a case for claiming White Oaks, too. After all, they go so well together."
"He won't if I kill him first," Hal muttered.
"Don't scowl like that, dear. It will give you frown lines one day. Mark my words. No, I will kill him myself."
Hal stared at his mother. "What?"
"Better me than you. You're young, and you have your whole life ahead of you. Now that I have you back, I won't have you throwing it away. I'm old, I've had my children, enjoyed the love of my life, and what's important is my legacy."
"Mother, do you really think—"
"Danielle," she said, waving at Lady Oberon like she was having the best time ever. "That dress is so becoming."
And then, hardly missing a beat, said,
"I almost cut the bastard's throat the other day when he came to see us in the pit. He was sniffing around Hopper, and I'd had enough. But then I heard about this party, and couldn't resist finding out what it was all about."
Hal all but stopped dancing.